Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham Dhammam Sangham Namassami. You are going on a long journey across the seas, and we're all on a long journey. We may not realize it. I think of life as a pilgrimage, and usually, when people are going on a pilgrimage, they're looking for something. When I started this pilgrimage, I don't think I realized what I was looking for, but I knew that I had to make some big changes to be able to go on this journey. And one of the biggest ones was to have a guide, because on my own I wasn't finding it, and I didn't know how I was going to find this guide, but the universe led me, and it was quite miraculous to find somebody that you could look up to, not a god, just a human being. But because this human being had certain qualities, I realized that those were the qualities that I thought were special, and I wanted those qualities. So every time we sit down to meditate and we go inward, we have a chance to examine ourselves and see our own condition. And when we see our own condition, it may distress us, because we can see how the mind won't settle down, or how we can get lost in obsessive thinking, or we can be destroyed by somebody else's opinion, or by what's happening in the world. What is happening in the world? There's a lot of confusion and a lot of disturbance, and it doesn't seem like many people are looking inward to understand their own condition. Because those of us that look inward to understand what's happening to us, well, I can't make any generalizations, but maybe the likelihood is that we're looking for a spiritual answer rather than a worldly solution. If we look back in history, the world has always been disturbed. Even in the time of the Buddha, there was a lot of disturbance. He could not prevent people from going to war and killing each other, even though he gave such breathtaking teachings and exuded, exemplified, embodied such beautiful qualities. And when I met this teacher, that was one of the things that I noticed. This took place in India. He was in a hidden place, not where you would expect, in a part of the country where people used to go to hire murderers. I didn't know that at the time. And so we might think that the place to go and get guidance or find out what qualities we want to develop would be from somebody who's famous or who's powerful. There are good leaders. And so it's really important for us to know what we want in terms of inner development and where to look for examples or a role model for that. Who is our role model? Do we have one? Or are we just aimlessly waffling through our lives, hoping to get the formula right, hoping that the mind will just eventually settle down through having a good meditation? I think the good meditation comes from developing certain skills already. There are lots of people who do very good meditation, but they're insufferable to live with. So what it really boils down to is, what are we doing ourselves? Not what the world is doing, not even what a role model is doing, but what are we doing? And I noticed many times over the years, after meeting this wonderful role model, how little I actually imbibed and followed of what he was able to teach me. And it was only when I actually took up the robe and started to restrain the mind more and more that I began to understand the value of renunciation. In the world, renunciation is so unpopular. I was talking to somebody just yesterday who has the intention to become a nun, and she had been overcoming many obstacles. And then I heard this little meow, and in her lap was sitting her cat. And she said, "That's the biggest obstacle of all." But if we look closely at who we're attached to, what we're attached to, the attachment is a state of mind. And it comes because we are habituated to receive a certain support. And the support is affection, company, so many things that pets can give us. People look at our website and think we have a lot of cats. But they all died or went to live somewhere else and then died. Life is like that. And so it's very hard to give up those things that we think support us, because we're addicted or we're habituated. But the cat is not the obstacle. It's the attachment. So understanding how happiness can be sustained in the mind takes us right back to looking for what is the condition of the mind. And how are we going to guide ourselves to safety? So even if we find a teaching, a teacher, and we have good company, lovely family members, or special friends, in the end, we're really alone. We are totally alone with our own mind state, and no one can change that mind state for us. We have to understand how to train our minds and the importance of taking up a training. And the first training is what the Buddha offered. In lay life, the training is 5 precepts. And these 5 precepts represent an ethical holding, to be held within a field of morality. And I cannot stress that enough, because the happiness that we're really looking for, the inner happiness and the inner peace, is based on a certain way of ethical living. So when we're in the world, it's very easy to be swayed from that trajectory of ethical living if we run into a situation where we want something and we can't get it in a direct way. Maybe we can get it in an indirect way, but it might not be harmless. It might not be nonviolent. It might harm someone if we did that. So to go to such a level of selflessness and giving up that upholds somebody else's dignity and well-being and happiness. So it's always good to reflect how much kindness, an act of kindness, even in small ways, we can actually give in our own lives. That would be a really remarkable generosity. And it's a beautiful theme in life. How can we be generous? How can we be kind? So an ethical blueprint for our life, it's all about nonviolence. And you could say generosity is nonviolent. So the precepts are not killing, not taking that which is not given, to be faithful in relationship, being true to one's partner and one's friends. So you could say that generosity is a higher form of being true. And then right speech. That in itself is a very big teaching. So that means nonviolent speech, truthful speech, helpful speech, benevolent speech, timely speech. Very difficult to pull those all together into one. Not talking behind someone's back, not gossiping, and not using harsh language, not swearing. Those kinds of guidelines. And then no drinking, no intoxication. And of course, that's a very important one, because if the mind is intoxicated even a little bit, then it's very hard to keep any precepts. Because even when the mind is not intoxicated, it's hard to keep the precepts. It would be harder to restrain greed and reactivity and selfishness, for sure. So where is the generosity in that? Well, it doesn't say so specifically. But aren't the five precepts very generous? If we all kept those precepts fully, and even more than fully, like the cup was over full, then that's tremendous generosity to everyone around us, because we would be trustworthy. People could trust us, we could trust ourselves. And if we trust ourselves, that means we trust the mind. But to train means that every day we're practicing a certain level of attention. Paying attention is mindfulness. Paying attention is being aware of what we're doing, how we're affecting ourselves and each other. That's generosity. And when we're paying attention, we're also giving our attention to the present moment. If we're really generous with our attention, then that's meditation. We're able to be mindful moment by moment to the point where our attention is very focused and we're really aware, fully aware of body posture, mental posture, and what is the trajectory of our attention. Are we seeing, are we acting, are we speaking, are we moving with calm, with care, with friendliness, with selflessness, with courage? How are we moving? How are we speaking? How are we interacting? So, in keeping those precepts, many qualities come out. Many beautiful qualities are developed. And the meditation itself evolves from that. Without that ethical basis, our meditation cannot fly. It cannot travel. It cannot go inward. We might be going all over the world, but the real journey is an inward one. And wherever we are, we have to still take stock of where am I, what is the condition of the mind, and what kind of qualities am I producing, exhibiting, sharing with the world. We might be able to put up with our own garbage, but why should we let other people put up with it? So that's really why the training of the mind and the renunciation are in themselves such acts of generosity. It's incredible. We don't have to go across the world to find a guide if we can keep those guidelines ourselves and reflect day in and day out, how am I doing? And just find a spiritual friend for us to help ourselves train and help ourselves develop. We need spiritual friendship. And we cannot always be that spiritual friend to ourselves. We might think we can, and there's a conceit in that. Because we're pretty blind, and we need somebody to be a second set of eyes to see, to know the way we are, and to point it out so that we can sharpen our ability to be quiet and calm and able to introspect and notice what qualities are exhibiting and being produced, and how can we tame the tiger within us. At a certain point, we are very wild. And some people celebrate being wild. There's nothing particularly beautiful about wild. We're not wild animals. We're humans. And we have the capacity to be wise rather than wild. We have the capacity to be aware of distraction and call it by its true name, and to turn the mind to being the witness of distraction and know that, so the awareness is knowing itself. Because that which knows the distraction is not distraction. Purified conscious awareness, that's what we are. The mind pulling is such a power, it's like Niagara Falls, just going over the edge. There's that wall that you can look at, the falls from the wall, but you don't jump over. We get in the habit of jumping in, and then we drown. But if we stand there and watch, just stand and just look at Niagara. Thinking is not the way. It's to know that the mind is caught up in thinking. But if you have to think of something, think of someone you love and send them your love. Be generous. Then you're not thinking. If you just practice that, your mind will become quiet. It just takes heroic patience. So the meditation practice is powerful when we have this profound base of purity, of conduct and speech, and mental attention. So to really know the quality, how am I behaving, to be behaved, have to cut in pieces the ego, and just to be beautiful, to breathe in a beautiful way, to know the truth of what we are and to develop the ability to know that. But that requires a certain confidence and faith that we can do this. And if we have a guide that was a human being, the Buddha was a human being, he was not a god, but he was quite special. And there are human beings in this world who have developed qualities similar to this purity of mind that the Buddha teaches and trained in that. And so it's good to have those kind of spiritual friends or close to that. Just look for friends that are true to the truth and not to something false. They might be great sports people, great gymnasts, great artists, play the violin. But when you become pure in your heart, it's the most magnificent sound that one can make. And it's the sound of silence. Purest sound. It is inaudible. When the mind is that quiet, then the truth comes resounding within us. We want that, whether we know it or not. I want that. I didn't know at first what I wanted, but I could understand that it had to do with peace, because I met somebody that was so peaceful and kind, and I didn't feel that peaceful and kind. I thought I was, but I wasn't. As soon as somebody was unkind to me, I would feel bullied and unhappy. The Buddha gives many teachings about that, and he himself was often mistreated, called names, challenged, insulted. But he was always kind and unharmed by these people and let them know, because he would demonstrate through his composure, through his demeanor, in the unshakable peace that he embodied. So I feel that human beings are here on this earth with that potential. Most of us don't know that. Maybe we find out late in life, not early in life, doesn't matter. The point is to know that and to move in that direction. So here we are, trying to know that and move in that direction. And it's a wonderful thing. Thank you for coming and listening.